Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 30. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
It's good to be back. We're doing a full episode. We did another special episode last week. We had an interview that you did earlier in the month with the folks from Rapid7, which was excellent. Thank you for doing that.
It was great to be there with them too. They were very, very entertaining and informative.
Yeah, no, I bring up the Rapid7 discussion because I know that you talked a little bit about IoT devices, IoT security, and how they're being used for some of these bad attacks. I know I'm a wordsmith and I'm saying bad attacks. I can't think of anything more decorative than saying bad.
Sad.
Sad. But yeah, no, I bring it up because Rapid7 actually, during their conference, they released an assessment and consulting service practice for IoT security, kind of specifically to go after sort of underprotected wireless enabled internet connected devices that don't have the same type of anti-malware and security protection that we have on a lot of our client devices. And I'll tell you something, Peter, we could really use that because we're in trouble. I mean, I was putting this outline together. I was looking at sort of the landscape and I said, oh, we should do a check-in about the Mirai botnet because there's some new stuff going on. And then another piece of news popped up, and then another piece of news popped up, and then it kept going. And it was like, it just, all this IoT, DDoS stuff started trickling in. And we're going to try to churn through it as quickly as we can. But yeah, it's, the situation is not good. I'm hoping I don't get too radioactive here, but I make no promises. So here we go. The Mirai botnet update. So Mike Heller, senior reporter at Search Security, last week had a piece on the new research that's come out from, I believe, Flashpoint. They confirmed a new variant of the Mirai botnet that I guess it was involved with some attacks on Deutsche Telekom, some outages. I mean, I guess that's putting it mildly. They had some serious problems with some attacks using the Mirai botnet. And I guess they had said in their report that the new, I don't quote it, the new Mirai variant is using some of the same command and control servers used by existing Mirai infrastructure, strongly suggesting that the infected devices are controlled by the same group. Now, we don't know who this group is. We can speculate because there have been a lot of attacks, and some of the ones that have been traced to, like the Dyn DNS provider. I mean, I don't even know if I can say this without going nuclear, but if you recall, Peter, that they now speculate, the people in the know, the experts now speculate that those attacks on Dyn were done to target the PlayStation network to disrupt activity on there because there were apparently some disgruntled gamers.
Okay. I mean,
now that the code's out there, we really don't know who's behind what. But so this new update to the Mirai botnet, it's apparently being controlled by a group that they think was behind the original attacks on like Brian Krebs, his security news website, and also I think it was OVH was the,
that's correct,
provider, hosting provider,
correctly,
European company that was hit. So Flashpoint says the new version of Mirai, of the Mirai botnet, has added the ability to scan for a flaw in the SOAP, the Simple Object Access Protocol, embedded in various routers, many of which are made by a specific manufacturer. Zixel? Am I pronouncing that right? I've never actually heard their name spoken. I've seen it a lot.
I think I may have heard their name spoken
okay,
a long time ago.
Am I doing it right?
I would pronounce it Zixel, but
Zixel.
But
it's more European.
Zixel is probably
Zixel. That sounds clunky. That's like American, but Zixel, that's got some flair to it. Yeah, we'll sure. go with Zazzle. We're going to be moving on to the next story anyway. So. So the Mirai botnet, we're in serious trouble because the code is out there and anybody can pick it up, and there are DDoS attacks for hire, you know, people paying money to disrupt their, you know, after the PlayStation Network or Xbox Live after they get banned for cheating, which is just, I mean,
it's silly.
I know. I'm ready to
childish.
It, well, yes, among other things. But now we have, you know, what could be sort of the originators of the Mirai botnet, the group that was behind the initial attacks, tweaking it so that it's even more dangerous. I mean, I don't think that that's it's, and they're showing the ability that they have to alter the code and to update it and to go after new vulnerabilities. Like we did a podcast a while back about the OpenSSH flaw that was being used. I mean, so now they're saying, okay, we'll go after SOAP and we'll be able to scan for this particular flaw to take over new devices. That's not good news. But I'll tell you what's even worse news, Peter. Now we have an issue with the Mirai botnet is apparently been, I guess, implicated in a new report from a company called Pentest Partners that says that, oh, by the way, the Mirai botnet has stolen a bunch of router passwords from the company TalkTalk. And I guess TalkTalk has denied this, but there's a very detailed report on Pentest Partners' website where they have screenshots, they show evidence, they show in pretty graphic detail how they tracked a lot of the theft, for lack of a better term, but basically they said this, you know, this malware has gone in and basically taken these Wi-Fi passwords and has gotten control of these devices. And it's, so let's pause here for a minute. We talked a while ago, we've talked on many occasions actually, both here in the studio and in the office, about how, well, we're going to see a lot more of this. These devices, especially the wireless routers, even though they have passwords, there's no real defenses against something like this from happening. But Peter, are you at all surprised that, you know, some of these companies, whether it's Zixel, whatever, or TalkTalk or other companies, which we're going to get to in a minute, have not sort of stepped forward and said, I know we said we couldn't do a firmware update, or we're not supposed to do a firmware update, but in the interest of our own brand and not falling victim to these IoT botnets, let's figure out a way. We've had a couple months. Let's figure out a way to push an update out that gets rid of these default passwords, or at least hardens the existing password. Does something, anything. And it doesn't seem like any of that has been done. So does that surprise you, or are you the cynic that I think you are?
What a way to phrase that question. But yeah, you know, I it doesn't surprise me that these companies are saying we can't do this.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, they're businesses.
They're
looking to make money, not spend it.
Yeah.
And fixing things that they're not getting paid for is kind of, you know, that's going to cost them money.
Exactly.
Whereas if they can say, hey, this, you know, that $30 VCR that you bought.
VCRs.
VCR. What am I? I'm thinking video.
Oh, DVR.
DVR. That $30. But I did buy a $30 VCR.
Time warp right there.
I am.
It's okay.
I feel like Billy Pilgrim. But the point is that these companies are selling these products, and I think I mentioned to you, I had a Wi-Fi repeater that I was getting ready to...
And you chucked it.
And I chucked it because I thought, I'm going to have to spend half an hour trying to figure out how to change the password on this, and that's not going to do it. It's not going to fix it. It never really seemed to actually do what it was supposed to do anyway. So, you know what? I'll throw it and I'll see what I can do, because it might be soon time to upgrade my whole Wi-Fi infrastructure in the house, just to, you know, to fix that. But the fact is, these things are not meant to be maintained over more than a couple of years, probably.
Sure, sure. But they are
being used for more than, you know, they're being used forever.
And it's, I guess, like, I would counter that to say, you're telling me that, and all the people that some of these manufacturers, some of these major companies have, that they can't figure out a simple way to at least check to see if the router's been compromised, and at least figure out some way to address the, like, do a password reset and then send a new, do something. Something. And I think, now this is where I'm going to ask you another question, Peter. Do you think, I know the government has come forward, and the DHS, NIST, organizations now are saying, this cannot happen. Like, we need to address this. So there's pressure there. But there's no, do you think there's any, do you think anyone's going to say, I'm not going to buy a Zissel router because I heard about them on the news being part of the Mirage? I don't think it's reached that. I don't think it's anywhere close to that. So I don't think it's going to impact. I mean, do you think it's going to, like, it's impacting brand? Like, for people like us, I think maybe.
I don't.
But your
think
average
that,
consumers?
I don't think that's happening now, but I wouldn't. I'm not sure that it will happen in the near future, just because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
The problem is that people think of these things as, you know, the cable modem or the cable box. It's something that you get, you put it in, and somebody else is supposed to be in charge of it. But that's not how it works. So when I bought my router, my Wi-Fi router, and the first thing I always do when I get these things is to go in and change the password, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, first you come up with a clever name for your hotspot.
Right, right. That's true. And in fact, there are naming conventions that will get you, if I remember correctly, in Windows 10, there's a Wi-Fi feature that allows you to share your Wi-Fi access. But if you put a prefix or a suffix on the Wi-Fi name, that'll...
Yep.
Now, do I do that? No, because it'll confuse everybody in the house, and I'll have to be doing tech support again for, you know, a couple of weeks until everybody gets all their systems going on that.
Right.
But that's something that I should do, and everybody should do if they don't want to be if they don't want to be discoverable by that particular service. But you know what? They'll be discoverable. There'll be some other way to discover it that the hackers will find. And we won't have a simple way to turn it off. But one of the problems with, one of the great things about Linux is that you can adapt it for all these different devices. You can make it an RTOS sort of, make it embedded. But I've always wondered how much of Linux is being embedded. I mean, is it everything? Did they just take Arch Linux or whatever Linux and just load it up on their image and do it that way? Because that seems to me not a great way to do it.
No.
Because you don't want to have Telnet or any number, you probably, do you need SOAP on a Wi-Fi router?
I don't know.
I
don't think so. Do you? You're the networking guy. You tell
okay.
me.
Okay. It's a long time ago. I wrote a white paper on SOAP for Microsoft.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I can't remember very much about SOAP, except that I think it was a protocol that was used for doing web stuff.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, way back when. Yeah.
Way back. This is we are talking like 15 to 20 years ago.
Oh God.
So, maybe they do need SOAP to run the Wi-Fi router, but I'm not convinced, and I'm not convinced that they've taken all the stuff that you don't need off.
Right. I mean, it would be hard for, like, TalkTalk to say, the Mirai botnet's targeting the SOAP protocol. It's scanning for vulnerabilities. Well, we'll just remove the protocol. I mean, that's not something. But if you're on top of this stuff and you're saying, we don't want our stuff to be used by attackers for these horrible, incredibly powerful IoT enabled attacks. Let's push a patch out that addresses this flaw. Let's stay on top of the news of the IoT attacks and do what we can. I mean, yeah, that'd be great. But I don't know what it gets, what economic benefit is there? Like, unless customers that are using those routers are saying, well, my router's slow because 30% of the capacity is being used for, you know, some botnet DDoS attack. Well, then that changes things because you're going to get calls from the customers. But if you're on the receiving end of the attack and you go to the manufacturer and you say, patch your stuff, come on, man. You know, I mean, what is that? Unless it's impacting, unless it's really harming the device and impact and negatively impacting the perform or the experience of the actual customer, yeah, I mean, it's gonna be hard to get them to do this sort of thing, even when they can figure out that they can update it and patch holes or change passwords or reset passwords. I mean, I know they can. Obviously, a huge password reset for, you know, that hundreds of thousands of devices is not, I mean, it's easier said than done, but still. Now, Peter, another item on the subject of manufacturers and their responsibilities. So this just broke. I just read about it on Krebs, KrebsOnSecurity.com. He picked up a blog post from an Austrian security company called SEC Consult, which said it found two backdoor accounts in Sony IP cameras, a line of Sony IP internet-enabled cameras. And they're mainly used by not consumers, not homes, but enterprises and law enforcement, government authorities. And according to the company, SEC Consult, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I mean, that's what it looks like. The two backdoor accounts were, I guess they can be used remotely by attackers. And it's unclear, at least reading this, whether or not they have been used in attacks, but you know that a lot of the research that we've seen about IoT attacks has included, you know, the prospect of IP, you know, internet connected cameras, whether they're video cameras or for law enforcement or whatever. So this puts kind of a new spin on things, and this is different than, you know, oh, we have the SOAP protocol embedded in our hardware. This is like, no, you should know if there are backdoor accounts in your devices, in the OS or the firmware of your devices. And whether or not Sony put them there, I don't know. But, you know, we were talking before we started recording. I expect a little bit more from Sony. I still think of them as a gold standard in technology. As a child of the 80s, I am a child of the 80s. I still have my Sony Walkman in my parents' attic somewhere. But, wow. Yeah, I mean, like, come on. You got to know that this stuff is there. You got to do a sweep. You have to know that your internet-connected devices are whether or not they've been implicated in an attack, you got to know that they are under attack, that they are being targeted. And you got to go in and you got to start doing a sweep or a review of your wares to figure out if it can happen to your stuff. I mean, I think that that's almost incumbent on a manufacturer. And I don't know, the backdoor thing kind of changes things for me. That's not a flaw.
Well, okay. So I'm looking at the blog post you mentioned.
Yep.
And my you can't see it. I'm not. I'm hiding it. But my brain is exploding because. According to this reporting, the two undocumented user accounts that are on these cameras are called Primana,
yep.
Primana,
yep.
And Debug,
yep.
And so,
which
I'm gonna take a wild guess here and say that at least one of these accounts was set up by the developers to debug the. And I'll leave it to the listeners to guess which one I think.
Yeah.
is the account.
I'm picking up what you're putting out there.
Right. So this is a tool that the developers were using. But the part that's making my brain blow up is that they used Telnet.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since you could just use Telnet on a typical system. You could type in Telnet, but what you get would be SSH, which is more secure.
Yep.
Telnet is not very secure. Telnet was actually one of the first protocols set up for the internet back in the 80s.
Information superhighway,
maybe,
man.
Even the 70s.
Oh yeah.
I mean, DARPA. File transfer protocol and Telnet were the two first application protocols, more or less. And Telnet was not considered to be safe years ago. So that's why now when you type Telnet, you get an SSH. You get it aliased out over to SSH.
Yep.
So this is a kind of thing, and the answer to this is not necessarily to apply another tool, or not necessarily even to come up with a technology fix. This is a kind of thing that it's bad, but if there's a consequence to it, like getting sued by people who have been damaged by it, or even, you know, let's say that a government says you can't sell product in this country that has a backdoor like that, if you are found to have it, you will have to pay the consequences.
Exactly.
So it's not a technical solution. It's a political or social or, you know, governmental solution outside of the realm of technology, because if you don't have a consequence to doing this kind of thing, there's no incentive to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, Sony doesn't care, apparently. I don't want to be too harsh, but
right.
companies will save half a penny on a screw if they can, because the margins are so close.
Yep.
You know, so either we have to be willing to pay a little bit more to get safer product, and certainly this is what's happened with automobiles. I mean, automobiles are much safer now than they were 50 years ago, but it isn't because the car manufacturers were saying, oh, hey, let's put in, well, maybe they were, but I think a lot of the safety innovations have been a matter of legislation.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't, you know, the car companies are not going to on their own change to a different kind of protocol unless there's a financial incentive.
And I hate that. I mean, we've talked about this previously about how, you know, there needs to be some type of regulation or regulatory movement or pressure from the government to make this happen. And I don't like that idea. It doesn't sit well with me, but at the same time, like if this stuff is affecting these devices, but it's not harming the end user, and it's the performance degradation is minimal, and the customer's not complaining about it, I just feel like the companies aren't going to do anything, and they're not gonna. I mean, time will tell. When in 2017, when companies start coming out with new routers, like just as an example, new routers, and they say, okay, we've got new features that are going to prevent this type of thing from happening specifically, then I will change my tune. But until that happens, yeah, I kind of wonder if I'm very skeptical that they're going to do this on their own. So we've talked a lot about Mirai, the Mirai botnet, how it's changed, how it's being used for new attacks. Well, apparently there's a new kid on the block, a new IoT botnet that has not yet been named, but Cloudflare. They issued a report the other day about some new DDoS attacks that were, I mean, these DDoS attacks were not on the level of what we saw initially with the Mirai botnet, but they're interesting. The volume was smaller. According to Cloudflare, it was about 400 gigabytes per second, 200 million packets per second. But the interesting thing here was, so I guess this was going on for pretty much the same, over the course of 6 days, Cloudflare clients were being hit. Cloudflare clients on the West Coast, they didn't obviously identify the companies involved or the targets, but they said for hours at a time, for 6 days straight, these attacks would happen. They would hit these sites, and you know, Cloudflare said, you know, that we mitigated the attacks and, you know, without impact to the customers, so everything's great there. But Cloudflare said the attacks are not coming from the Mirai botnet. And I'll read a segment here from the report. Quote, they're using a different attack software and are sending very large layer 3, layer 4 floods aimed at the TCP protocol. The attacks are also highly concentrated in a small number of locations, mostly on the U.S. West Coast. So there's another, I guess, IoT-enabled botnet. I mean, the speculation is that they're using IoT devices, wirelessly enabled devices, not smart devices or client devices. And if you remember, Peter, this has been pointed out in a couple of stories, but some of the attacks that we've seen recently, I think the Dyn attack actually was, I think they said the majority was from, they traced to the Mirai botnet, but a significant portion of the attack traffic was generated through an unidentified source. So this could be that. It could just be a brand new one. It's, I mean, I don't know what the significance, I mean, how big is the significance of going after L3, L4 and using TCP? I mean, I don't, is it that significant?
Well, it's a good question. One of the things that I found interesting about the Cloudflare report was that they apparently the first days that they saw this, it looked like somebody was coming into the office, starting an attack.
Yes. Doing it for 8 hours.
Eight and a half hours, then stop.
Right.
And when I see a pattern like that, it makes me wonder, could this have been something completely, you know, unintentional? Could this be somebody had something hooked up to a switch, to the light switch? They come into the office, they start their work, they hit the light switch, the attack starts.
Yeah,
probably not. This is, you know, this is probably it's clearly something that was purposely
you
done.
Never know, though. It could be like, you know, the Griswolds in Christmas Vacation when they flip the light switch and their lights go on in the house and it drains the power from all the surrounding neighborhood in suburban Chicago, you know?
Right. Well, okay, spoiler alert.
So that's a bad example.
We should put a spoiler in the alert for that.
That's a classic. Everyone's seen
it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, God.
I'm saving.
All right.
I'm saving it.
Continue.
But the fact is that sometimes, you know, sometimes an attack is an actual attack. And sometimes an attack is just a byproduct of some other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, as long as we have this vast population that's only getting bigger of these IoT things that are all connected, and as long as there's no incentive for companies to fix them, to make them more secure, you know, take out, to prune off the stuff that doesn't, it's not necessary, and even to look at the things that they think are necessary and prune some of those off if they're not safe, you know, we're gonna risk and repeat. It's gonna be the same. We're going to be talking about this next year.
Brutal, Peter.
I
will say the thing that, you know, to your point about, you know, going into the office 8 hours, 6 days, I mean, 6 days in a row, this activity. The thing that stood out to me was, if you're doing this regularly for 8.5 hours, 6 days straight, and this is over the holiday break, this is over Thanksgiving, so who knows where they're getting this traffic from? It could be over in Europe. It could be countries that don't have that, you know, holiday break. But the fact that the attackers directed, you know, a consistent level of traffic over 6 days, the same time span, to me that says that either they've got so many devices that the impact to the user is, you know, it's hard for them to notice. It's almost negligible, or they're getting it from devices that they know no one's using. Or they you know, maybe it's the middle of the night and they know that no one's using, you know, that people leave their DVRs on and no one's watching them. Or they're, you know, using wireless enabled security cameras on the other side of the world during the day when they know they're probably not on, because, you know, maybe there's building security and those cameras only come on at night when no one's around. That's devious. That's good planning. And I'm more worried that there are going to be cases like this where the attackers are sophisticated and there's some forethought and there's planning and there's consistency. And it is, it's like they're going into their job and turning on, flipping a switch and boom, same amount of traffic every day hitting these targets. And yes, Cloudflare defended their clients. Great. But that's only if you have Cloudflare. What if you don't? What if you don't have a DDoS mitigation firm? You don't have a CDN to back you up. So I'm concerned. And like you said, risk and repeat. All I want for Christmas is for a Wi-Fi router manufacturer to come out and say, you know, the line must be drawn here, in the words of Captain Picard. You know, this far, no farther. We are doing something about this. Our new routers will not get punked by disgruntled gamers or whatever cybercrime ring that is posing these attacks. Ooh.
Well,
that was a lot.
It was, yeah. But not to throw.
No, go.
But and I think you and I have been talking about this. What happens when the attackers, instead of taking 30% of your bandwidth or something that will affect, yeah, you know, that is noticeable, what if they just, you know, they just send out a couple of packets every hour? I mean, that's totally not going to impact your performance at all.
I know. That's what I think is happening. I think they're using my laptop right now. Do you hear that fan going? I think they're like, oh, he's recording a podcast. let's take a little browser activity and send it, you know, click fraud and whatever.
No, yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter,
it keeps us work, keeps us in a job, right?
It gives us work and yes, gives us angst. Thanks for sitting. Thanks for sitting in here with me as usual. I guess we should wrap it up here. We will be, I guess we I just a sort of a preview of some of the stuff we have coming. We've got a couple interviews that we hope to get edited and online. We've had some interesting conversations with various folks in the security field and security industry, different vendors, different experts. So look for that as we get closer to Christmas.
And don't forget, we're now on
iTunes. Check us out on iTunes. Risk and Repeat. From Tech Target, from Search Security. And as usual, I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security. Thanks so much for being part of the discussion as usual, Peter.
Always happy to do it.
And thanks to all the listeners. We will see you next time.